profile. Well, that's it for today's show. Hope you had some good lessons out of this, and talk to you in a month.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
This program previously aired on June 6th, 2020.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another program in our special series recorded from home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today we have guests from KUSD's Instructional Technology, Professional Learning, and Information Services departments. You can imagine that they have had a lot to do in the last few months that is different from the things that they did before. And we're going to learn a little bit about what their roles have been in the transition to online learning, and maybe a little bit about the plans for fall, if they have any news for us, but it's hard to say at this point. So our first guest is Annie Fredrickson. She's the current coordinator of Instructional Technology and Library Media for the Kenosha Unified School District. Prior to her 18 years at the district level, she served as an Instructional Technology Teacher Leader for Lance and Mahone Middle Schools. Annie is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison and received her graduate degree from National Lewis University and her administration certification from Cardinal Stritch University. Welcome, Annie.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Folkers is the current coordinator for professional learning for Kenosha Unified School District. Throughout her 22-year career in Kenosha, she has served as a special education teacher, instructional coach, teacher consultant, and administrator. Jennifer is a graduate of Carthage College and received master's degrees from National Lewis University and Cardinal Stritch University. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you.
And we have Chris Keckler. He is the Chief Information Officer for KUSD. He has worked for Kenosha Unified since 1997, serving in various roles. Chris has completed two master's programs related to educational leadership and technology integration. He has taught technology-based courses, coordinated a school-based one-to-one program, and was an intervention dean and was the principal of the Kenosha East School, the KUSD virtual charter school, for 3 years prior to his current role. Welcome, Chris. Say hello.
Good morning.
Thanks. So it's nice to see you and your homes. Every time I make a call these days, I start by asking how everyone is and who you are sheltering with. I guess you're not totally sheltering in Wisconsin anymore, as well as the work situation in your household. So if you don't mind, we'd love to hear how many people are using your broadband in your home. Annie, do you want to start?
Sure. We've got two. My husband's working from home as well as I am, and he's on the second floor and I'm on the first. We have no kids at home, so I don't have to face those challenges that many of our other staff members do.
Okay. No cats or dogs?
No animals. It's pretty quiet here. I'm probably getting more work done here than I do in other environments.
Okay. And Jen, how about you?
So I'm sharing this experience with two college students. So got to have them home and finished up their semester. And then we also have two dogs. So I have a puppy and a 12-year-old German Shepherd who's been hanging out with us also.
Great. And Chris, how are you sheltering?
I've been at work every day except for one. And at home, it's just myself and my kids when I have them, and their 20 devices that they each have.
20 devices. So you've been able to work at the Educational Support Center or somewhere else?
Yeah, I've been working here It's been just more happenstance. I can certainly work from home. A little bit more productive here on average, just with multiple screens and access to some other resources. But I can still complete pretty much all of my tasks remotely as well.
So is it just you there these days, or are there other people kind of in and out?
This building was basically a ghost town for the first month. You'd be lucky to have 6 to 8 people in a building that usually has 120 or 140 that operate here on a daily basis for about the first month or so. And then the last several weeks, there's been a gradual return of staff members for Kenosha Unified for the Educational Support Center with a larger expansion in the next week or so.
And is there special protocols that you're following while you're there?
Yes, there will be the integration of social distancing expectations, some PPE material that'll be handed out to each staff member or made available, and then just other expectations that'll be communicated, avoiding common areas. We have a little mini kitchenettes areas throughout the building, things like that. And then obviously no large gatherings for meetings. We can still utilize virtual options throughout this building.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that gives us a little bit of a picture, especially for people who've been to the ESC before and they sort of know it's a big building, but there were a lot of people all in there at one time. So it probably has to be a little different. So it's been a challenging couple of months for everyone. I imagine your jobs in technology and professional learning and IT have changed, probably more than anyone else's. Well, maybe not more than the teachers. So tell us, what was your job like before the COVID-19 crisis, and what do you do differently now, and how did you make that transition? So Annie, do you want to tell us a little about that?
Sure. Normally in spring, we're wrapping up grant activities, professional learning, beginning conversations for refreshing technology for next year, and a lot of the curricular pieces are doing some assessments, and all that is kind of wrapping up towards the spring. That's the normal picture. But things definitely did change when we started the Safer at Home piece and everybody had to go virtual. My team and I were providing support continually, from dawn till dusk. And we had sessions that were set up for schools so that there were office hours that they could jump in. We did mini sessions. We created some online sites that they could access self-directed professional learning opportunities with screencasted training sessions. So it was quite a bit of work up front, and now the support afterwards, because we're finding teachers are getting a little bit more comfortable with trying new digital tools and resources. So they just need a hand-holding, but a virtual one.
Right. And I'm sure, just like, I teach at Carthage and people have various levels of comfort with various kinds of applications. So I'm sure the same is true for you. You probably had some teachers who just dove right in and some who did need more of a handholding experience. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. There were, the hard part was there were a lot of vendors offering free access to dual tools and resources out there that we normally wouldn't have had support for. So there are a lot of good ones, but that kind of spread us a little bit thin as to support their efforts with dabbling in new technologies. But we've had some great discussions and collaborative work with teacher leaders and Jen's department, and she'll share a little bit about that and how we're going to move forward with that piece.
Okay, so then the next is Jen. Tell us a little bit about what you did before and how things transitioned and how they might be different now.
Well, usually during the year in March is kind of when we start to begin to think about next year. Things are kind of, as far as our department, wrapping up as far as planning. So we were starting to finalize the end of the year activities and starting to plan for summer and starting to look at fall. Then when this came along, it really did change the way we were looking at how to deliver professional learning. Team worked with Annie's department and looking at how do we provide virtual professional learning for teachers. We're so used to our face-to-face getting teachers in to the ESD to do some learning, and how do we reach them in their homes? So really looking at different platforms to do that. We also then we're starting to do some focus groups. We had some new programming starting next year, so really pulling teachers in to get their opinions for our upcoming changes to some programs. And then there's been some virtual professional learning. I know last week and this week we've got leadership teams from all of the schools participating in an online training that was supposed to happen face-to-face with a national organization, and they're doing some virtual learning, which I've heard some really great reviews for. And then moving forward, just looking at all summer, we're gonna have virtual professional learning, so there won't be any face-to-face. And then we actually are redesigning new educator orientation, so it's a virtual platform. So when we onboard our new educators, they'll be going through a virtual orientation.
Yeah, when I interviewed the superintendent a few weeks ago, she said that you're doing all of the hiring online as well. You're not doing any face-to-face interviews. So what an interesting way to start your teaching career, right?
Yeah, actually, I was on an interview committee this morning, so it was just very different conducting and being part of the interview team. Very right. Different.
They'll have something to talk about to their classes for the rest of their careers about how everything started for them.
Yes.
So Chris, tell us, what do you do as Chief Information Officer, and has that changed since we have moved to stay at home or stay away from other people at least?
Well, I have the pleasure of supporting two departments for Kenosha Unified, Educational Accountability, which is tasked with a lot of the regulatory components for school districts. That would be data tracking, assessments would be a big one, and that's probably one of the bigger pieces. We were just getting at the early stages of our spring accountability assessments that students take. So we had just completed the grade 11 ACT, which is a state required test. That one's in person. That was the week before the first week in March. And so that was right before we had the safer at home order come into play. So the cancellation of all those assessments was more just a notification. I'm sure a lot of students and parents didn't mind skipping that for 1 year. So that won't generate report cards for schools for this fall. There'll be further information about that coming out. But it's still trying to find that accountability piece. As an example for attendance, you know, we used to take attendance as far as a student physically being in a chair for a certain duration of minutes, regardless of their progress in a course or their capacity to learn or their, you know, progress monitoring that you can give an assessment for. And so that is leading now to conversations, not just at the local level, but at the state level on how best to monitor that. We have a alternative monitoring practice for eSchool, for example, where it's participation in a course to gauge whether or not you're attending in that sense. And so those types of conversations are currently going on, both looking at the state level. From the information services side, you know, we deal with supporting upwards of tens of thousands of devices for our 25,000 users, and their mobile devices or workstations. And when you take the workforce, the adults, and scatter them and have them work remotely, it's to ensure that they have a mobile device that can get to the resources, be it a teacher, a support person, a building administrator, access to shared files. So we had to work rapidly to try to address all of those needs and to still support them in that capacity. From the student side, once it became pretty evident that we would not be returning on April 6th from that original expectation, we were in consultation with other large school districts and also the state superintendent about these extensions. That pivoted us to the form of saying that since we're going to entertain this remote learning option for the rest of the year, we really should get devices in the hands of students that need devices. There is a federal expectation and regulation piece that as we educate minors with an electronic medium, we are federally required to filter that appropriately for content and other malicious things to try and make it a safe and appropriate learning environment for them. And kind of scrambling at that point, not knowing who had a device at home or not, it was really just to offer blanketly across the district to our 21,000 students that if you needed a device and were currently enrolled, you can get a device. It was basically a Chromebook that we had. We have those all throughout our building. So to date, we've handed out about 6,800 Chromebooks, which is the equivalent of about $2 million of taxpayer-funded assets that have been handed out to the students to help them with their learning as they progress through the remaining several weeks of the school year. And at this time, we're only collecting those of graduating seniors and moving towards the expectation that regardless of whatever physical format we're operating in the fall, that students will still need a district-provided device. So it's not to be collecting 6,800 devices, it's really to be getting devices to the remaining two-thirds of the students.
That is a lot. I wonder how much your experience as principal of the e-school has helped inform you during this process.
I approach it two different ways. One, to separate out the technology piece of it. Getting out, thousands of devices to thousands of students is really only a logistics piece. You have X number of devices, X number of students, and access to certain material, whether it's blocking certain websites to protect students or allowing certain resources that a teacher finds. It's not that a teacher found an article in a magazine and they wrote down some notes and then their kids were coming the next day and they presented it. Now you have teachers that are trying to use a global medium and they find multiple online resources, but they have to work with their instructional technology staff, the wonderful people in Annie's department, to then say, okay, this is something I'd like to integrate in my classroom, and I need to ensure that it's appropriate and that all the students have access to it. So there's permission settings that we have to grant and other things. So that is what lends itself to the e-school format of really building that teacher capacity and being comfortable with the online tools and the online options to best monitor students' needs. It really shouldn't be that a teacher finds 40 videos on YouTube that cover all their content and just sends links to kids all the time. There should be proper interaction. There should be quality feedback in a timely manner. There should be encouragement and support structures using the technology, be it our student information system or other means like the Google Classroom, to monitor the student's progress. And I know that's been a concern throughout the district, not just for Kenosha Unified, but across the nation on how schools have had the inability or ability to track students' participation. And right now it's basically anecdotal to find a teacher to say that on average, they only have half of their students participating right now, or two thirds of them. It gets a little bit concerning when we have students distant from their education and their educational resources.
Right. Well, we can talk about that in a second. I'm going to do a reintroduction just in case people have just joined us. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of KUSD's Instructional Technology, Professional Learning, and Information Services Department's responses to the COVID-19 crisis is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So I want to go back and ask all of you, so what has been the hardest part of this process of sort of moving everything online? So I'll start with Annie. What's been the hardest part for you?
Karen, I think when districts move to a one-to-one environment, dedicated one-to-one environment for students, they have more time. So the condensed time frame for me, for us, has been very challenging. If you think about other the big districts in Wisconsin, they spend a whole year getting those plans in place so that your teachers are prepared with proficiency levels to know how to instruct with best practices, right? That's the whole instructional side, which is most important. But then what Chris is doing now, and I think he'll tell you a little bit later about the whole access piece, we're taking something that normally takes more time and now pushing it into a 4-month time frame, and we've got to do it the best way possible that has the best results, right? Mm-hmm. So a little bit of pressure, but I think, when you work with tremendous people, it can happen. And we certainly are dependent on each other and integrating our skills and talents to get that to happen and most efficiently. So that's been the biggest challenge, I think, for all of us, or at least for me and my department, for sure.
Jen, how about you for professional learning?
I think, like Annie said, it's that time has been condensed. And in professional learning, really trying to understand what the needs are of our staff. What's the professional learning that we can provide to them now? It's not like we discovered now, let's have some training in the summer. We really need to come together collaboratively and come up with some best practices to help support our teachers. So I think that was the hardest, or I don't want to say hardest, but one of the most challenging things that we faced. And I think also working with teachers on utilizing the technology to collaborate with each other. I think we are very used to getting together in a room and collaborating. Well, how do we do that virtually? So I think that was a big challenge. And then also being flexible. So we needed to be able to pivot at any moment in time because situation was changing. Some of our best plans did not go through because another thing came down as far as limitations, or that we weren't coming back. So I think that flexibility and knowing that you could plan something and by Friday, you're going to have to come up with a different plan.
So, Chris, you spoke a little bit about handing out the devices to the students. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What was the process like? And do you think every family has access to some sort of device and internet access at this point?
That's a lot of wonderful questions, and certainly ones that every district is working to tackle with right now. We did some surveys both before and after our spring break that allowed families to give feedback and also request a device so that we could do it in an organized fashion. It certainly isn't one that we take lightly, where we just had a stack of Chromebooks and somebody pulled up and we just handed it to them. All the devices are checked out appropriately to the students, similar to checking out a book in a library, and the parents take on the passive liability and responsibility for the appropriate cost of replacement if it is damaged in their care. When we talk about that equity piece, and you see different surveys on a national level or a state level on homes that might have the internet or might have technology, you have to be careful on how those questions were worded. When basically any mobile cell phone is its own hotspot, and students might have a dedicated broadband, but they might have that hotspot, they could check yes or no to those boxes without knowing whether or not they can turn their phone into a hotspot. Mm-hmm. And even if they can, that's still a shared medium that needs to be in close proximity to other laptops. So when you see the quality surveys out there about who has access in their homes and what type of environment they have, it gets a little bit concerning when the parents taking the surveys don't know the landscape that you're presenting. The other one is the shared devices. And so you might have internet at home, and we even have this with staff members who have students in KUSD as well. Then when we kind of scattered there in mid-March, there were some staff members that we were just working to make sure that they had devices. And they said, no, I have a computer at home. And I said, okay, but we have a device ready for you now. And it's like, no, I'll use the one at home. And within a week to a week and a half, we get the request saying, okay, can I have that laptop now? Because mm-hmm. I'm tired of sharing my one computer with my three kids and everybody taking turns on trying to use it. So it's painting that picture on what is a quality educational setting that could be supported in the home environment. And that gets more complicated now when we talk about remote connectivity. We currently are finalizing an RFP process for mobile hotspots. Green Bay, for example, a district of comparable size, has upwards of 2,000 of them that they're looking to hand out to their students in need. And so these are monthly charged mobile hotspots that the students could take with them that are appropriately filtered and provide access to the internet. And so now when you have to envision parents that are going to be going back to work, and some of them may not have appropriate childcare options, those kids might need to leave one home and go to grandparents' house, for example, that they may or may not have the internet, and to kind of remove those barriers that our students have with access to not just the technology, but the resources.
Right. Those are all sort of issues that I haven't even contemplated. Thank you for sharing that. So have you heard from families and students about what it's been like for them to have access at home, or has it been difficult, or?
Yeah, we've our help desk, which has been active this whole time, and staffed by some wonderful folks that help the entire KSD community, we still get repeated requests from staff and students alike, because there was a learning curve as well. We'd get requests of families saying, hey, this device isn't as fast as I think it should be, or it's not connecting properly. And whereas we support our KSD devices, we're not free and unlimited tech support when somebody's Wi-Fi is misconfigured at their home, or when they parents would say, or a staff member would say, well, it's not as fast as it should be. Well, are they taking into account that their kids are home now and they're all streaming Netflix, for example, and all using that shared bandwidth? So it's helping educate the greater community. And then obviously the humongous rise in spammers or hackers or anybody else that's trying to send a malicious email to try and compromise credentials of a staff member to get personal identifiable information or confidential information to then use in a malicious manner. That's the initial estimates is that's gone up 600%+ in the weeks right after the COVID pandemic. So you have a lot of social engineering of targeted phishing or spamming emails that go out, and we get them on a near daily basis now.
Wow.
Karen, can I jump in on that too? I don't work directly with parents. However, we get feedback from staff members or teachers that are out there saying our parents need some training. So normally in a regular school year, we're doing most of that engaging with the students with digital tools and resources at school, right? Now it's 100% at home. So we had to train the parents on things that they would need to help their child with, especially at those primary grade levels. You know, when you get to secondary, they're pretty independent, but not in elementary. So we've had to create some professional learning for parents, and it is a big focus for Jen's work and my work this summer moving forward for fall, to go, what is it our parents need and what kind of resource can we build for them, not knowing exactly, you know, what our challenges will be in September, right?
Wow. Yeah, and so I suppose, I mean, one way you could do that is to make a series of YouTube videos about various issues that keep coming up, so you don't all have to answer the same questions 50 times. But I'm sure some of it is really hard to anticipate also.
Well, a lot of our key tools or our learning platforms, we can anticipate those. So we've got that. We've got a few created already, and we try to have them translated as quickly as possible, right? We've got to keep that in mind. So we just want to make sure those basic universal applications and tools, that we have those pieces for our parents.
So what, for all of you, what have been the biggest challenges about online teaching? Has it been the connectivity, the applications, the professional learning? You know, what have you heard from the teachers about what it's like to teach from home? I guess, Annie, you could start.
Well, for my department, it's probably best practices. So they might know entry level into a tool or a resource, but now, again, I think Chris alluded to it earlier. What do you do with that tool? How do you engage students? How do you get them thinking critically or, you know, inquiring about more information? All those key pieces we know kids need to know how to do, those skill set. How do you make that happen? As well as, you know, just having or keeping in mind culturally responsive teaching. How does that look in a digital environment? So how are you making connections with all those kids that might be responding to a discussion question you put out there? How does this one student know you're reading their response, right? Mm-hmm. It's that reflection and feedback has to be there for all of our kids. So how does that happen? Those are the best practice pieces that we're going to work on and offer support for this summer and in early fall.
Great. And Jen, can you chime in on this one too?
Yeah, I think also looking at, you know, our teachers understand their content and we're great and masterful in the classroom. And now how can they bring that in a virtual world and really engaging the students? And then also that support of the parents at home. Now that parents are home and are engaging with that lesson, you know, how do we help support parents as they're going through those lessons to ensure that students are understanding? And I think Annie too talked about the digital tools. We've had them, now we've been able to use them. And so really ensuring that our teachers are taking that time to learn some of those new skills, and applying those in their lessons. So I think it's biggest challenge is just helping them understand the best ways to reach their students. And as Annie mentioned too, those culturally relevant pedagogy, how do we ensure that all of our students see themselves in the instruction that's happening?
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you have anything to add to this, or maybe some lessons learned from being the principal of the e-school?
It's I'll date myself a little bit, but and I would think this percentage has gotten a little bit better, but as Kenosha eSchool is part of a larger state consortium and recognized by the state as a quality online learning delivery platform and the model that we still represent to this day, it was estimated that only approximately 10-12% of the students would find success in a full-time virtual environment as motivated to sit and do that. And as more and more teachers integrate online resources and online learning, it's to help bridge that gap of comfort for the students and also the teachers at the same time. When teachers are able to model good quality online practices, collaboration, responsiveness, insights, and not just their content knowledge that they have for their particular curriculum areas, then it branches out into the student level where they gain that comfort level as well. Trying to have students become socially responsive citizens by posting things or commenting to others is really one of the core tenets that we need to be aware of and reinforced at every grade level and in every classroom so that teachers can find more success and the students can find more success as they proceed.
Okay. I'm just going to quickly do a reintroduction. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. This is Education Matters. Today we're talking with KUSD Instructional Technology, Professional Learning, and Information Services Departments about COVID-19 and how it has changed what they've been doing this spring. You may listen again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So this is a question for any of you, so you can kind of dive in. What worries you most about your students during this time, and what worries you most about teachers during this time?
Worries me most. The students, I know we had a good plan when they were on campus with digital citizenship, but that has amplified with being virtual, right? So they spend a lot of time now in that environment. And so it's key that we continue that education with them so that they socially interact online appropriately, but as well as ethically, you know, just to remember all those pieces, because now if you're doing all that instruction, you know, where are they grabbing their pictures from? Where are they grabbing their video from? And how are they attributing that work to whomever created it, right? So we need to really find a way to embed that into the instruction. So I'm keeping a keen eye on that piece. For teachers, boy, I'm impressed with the way they are taking risks and trying things, especially with screencasting. You know, some of them have really done this huge leap this spring. So I think there's a momentum there. I think we're all tired. So summer is going to be a good time for many of them to, you know, reboot, right? But fall will be good. I'm not too worried. I think we've got a tremendous staff, and I think everybody's up for the challenge.
Good. How about Jen? What do you worry about for your students and in the teachers you work with?
I think just for the students, like their social emotional well-being. There's a lot going on, and how are they processing? And I think school was a way for them to be able to have that additional support that they may not be receiving. Also thinking about just, you know, personally, like, are they able to get a nutritional meal every day? I know we are doing a fabulous job with providing that. But I know that potentially some families aren't taking advantage of that opportunity. So I think for me, that's what I'm worried about, on top of, are they engaged in learning? You know, are they every day, in, you know, working with their parents or family at home to stay you know, in that educational realm. So that's my worry for students. I think for teachers, echoing Annie, I am amazed at what teachers have put together. I've heard some great responses from parents saying that, you know, I've really enjoyed how my teacher is connecting with my student and the lessons that they're putting together. And just the creativity of that, videos that I've seen of students submitting the work that they're doing, just really cool things that even our encore classes, you know, in music and PE, like, how are you doing that virtually? There's some really phenomenal activities that teachers have put together to continue learning and connecting with students. So I think for me, I hope that summer becomes a time that they can rejuvenate and then bring some of those lessons that they've learned this spring into that classroom, not knowing what we're gonna look like when we come back in the fall, but I hope that they continue to use those great skills that they've learned this spring.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, do you wanna weigh in on this one too?
Yeah, just to, I guess, follow up, I certainly didn't wanna give the impression that only 10 to 12% of our kids would find success. That was more kids that would have operating completely and fully virtual, you know, as we proceed into this next school year and entertain options that might be a mixed or hybrid version in just building that comfort level. And I think Annie and Jen did an awesome job illustrating that there's no shortage of teachers and students that have really stepped up and been quality examples for their peers. And what we refer to as power users are those that can help those, be it other teachers or students that are still have a little bit of anxiety about operating online.
Mm-hmm. So do you, I know no one really knows what fall is going to look like, but do you have some plans, at least a little bit? Are there improvements you hope to make before fall with devices, connectivity, training, etc.?
From the technology standpoint, we are proceeding with the expectation of getting a device to every student over the course of the summer in some fashion. Details forthcoming. So it'll could be at your next radio show, maybe.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, the connectivity piece is gonna be tricky as well. There are districts that have already proceeded down a path of one-to-one, and whether or not that there's an associated student fee is yet to be determined, whether or not there's gonna be supplemental extended warranty coverage offered, things of that nature still have yet to be finalized and decided. We are going off of our board's expectation, obviously, to educate our students in the best manner possible. The connectivity piece is a kind of a whole nother beast to try and ascertain. And when we talk about things like hotspots, for example, that we might be handing out in some fashion, what determines the need for that? And are we going to have one per device per student? Or if we have a family in need that has three students enrolled in KUSD, can we use one device, but then it's a shared medium, and do they all need to sit in the same room and make sure they're filtered? So there are those logistical pieces. So to try and say that, you know, we have several months or multiple months until students return, we really don't, because if we need to make large purchases of devices, everybody else is trying to buy devices as well, or hotspots. And to even be told we put an order in, a large order in just over a week ago, it's fingers crossed that we'll get some of those devices by end of June or mid-July. And then to turn around and configure them appropriately and assign them to the right students, now you're talking about end of July or early August. So it's going to be a pretty hectic summer for the Information Services Department, just from that standpoint. Certainly expect that similar with what Jen and Annie could add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either of you have something to add to that?
I'd say with the professional learning, the training, I think this has given us a great opportunity of coming up with some unique ways to train a large group of teachers. I think that's always been some of our issues, is because we have so many teachers and we don't have enough subs and really don't want to pull them out of their classroom. We've come up with some really creative ways to ensure that there's training for teachers. So I'm really excited to kind of look at some new creative ways to provide that learning for teachers moving forward. So I think that's, to me, and the improvement is the delivery of professional learning. I think it's highly going to be improved.
Right. So just selfishly, I would like to ask, what do you think we should do differently for teacher preparation, preparing them for this world? Some of it we've already had to do by default, but I'm just wondering if you have suggestions.
There's no question in my mind they all should have a course on virtual learning. Mm-hmm. No question. It needs to happen. And I kind of, in my discussions with other people, say the work we're doing right now will happen whatever environment we have in September, because it will be good for a fully virtual, it would be good for blended, it would be good for on-site, right? So mm-hmm. we're planning to just enhance the skills that our teachers have to use those tools. But I really feel that colleges should have a course on virtual learning, and what does that look like? So that's my plug.
Yeah, I might be consulting you on that later.
Okay.
What are some good things that have come out of this whole experience? It's hard to say, because we don't know how it's going to end, really, or when it's going to end. But is there anything that you think is positive that's come out of this pandemic period?
For me, I think we are a fabulous team. But I think we've come closer together. When working at the Educational Support Center now for about 10 years, is I think this has really given us a great opportunity to work across departments and really have rolled up our sleeves. So I've seen a great collaboration. Though we were collaborating before, I've really sensed that from all of us. So I think that is one of the positives. And again, it's given us an opportunity to think outside the box. We've looked outside of that typical school day as far as professional learning, and we've looked at what are some different ways to address the needs of our students and our teachers in that virtual platform, and been able to kind of really, again, look outside of our box and create some really fabulous opportunities.
I would add that, we've got some new practices or procedures that have been streamlined by the necessity to use a virtual environment that I think will continue even when we're past this current challenge.
Just the whole thing about having to drive to a place to meet with other people, and no one is going to assume that anymore. I think that makes a huge difference. I'm thinking about parent-teacher conferences, right? You could actually do those without the parents having to come to school, especially if they are working a shift that would make that difficult for them. So those seem to be things that might really change for the better on some level. Do any of you have an interesting story that you can tell? I always like to end on kind of a positive note. Have you heard from a teacher, a student, a parent, someone in the ESC who have had a great experience with technology that probably wouldn't have happened without this?
I'll actually steal Annie's, because she shared this with her. We had a grant that Annie spearheaded, and teachers are learning new technology skills, and we had to revert to an online professional learning day back in, I believe it was in April. And I think what happened is, because of the format, those teachers who engaged in that professional learning were able to showcase what they learned. And I think that was a fabulous opportunity for them to be able to work with their teams, where I don't know if they would have had that same opportunity. So I think it really allotted some time for them to share their new skill sets and build that collaboration with them. So sorry, Annie, if I stole yours, but that was the one that rose to my head, that you just shared how it was impressive to see those teachers who just got done finishing that learning, and they were able to jump in, implement, and really share that with their teams.
Oh, it's okay that you shared it, because it really was cool. I was jumping in virtually to these professional learnings at the high school. And so I saw several of our high school participants from the grant leading sessions. Mm-hmm. So I left them a little message or in the chat window and connected with them afterwards. And they were excited. They said, hey, I had an opportunity and I led this Screencastify session. And I said, you looked great. But it was really cool, because they got to put that piece. We consider them teacher leaders when they finished the grant, and that proved to be true for sure.
Well, that's great. Thank you all for joining me today. I've certainly learned a lot. I hope the listeners have as well. So our guests today have been Annie Fredrickson, the Coordinator of Instructional Technology and Library Media for the Kenosha Unified School District. Jennifer Folkers is